Okay, well, thank you so much for the introduction, and thank you for the award as well. Today I'll be talking about teachers' beliefs. There's a minute click, or do I just need to speak more closely?
He was going to come back and plug it in. He didn't have it set up. May I have to speak up a little bit?
Okay. All right, so I'll do my best to project. Okay, so today I'll be talking about teachers' beliefs about intervening in sexual orientation-based peer victimization. And by that I mean either verbal or physical peer victimization that is related to actual or perceived sexual orientation. And I'd just first like to introduce my co-authors on this presentation, Henny Boss and Teo Sanford, who are sitting here. Okay, so first, just to say I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so first, just some background information. So lesbian, gay, and bisexual adolescents are commonly victimized by peers at school, and such victimization is associated with a variety of negative psychosocial and health outcomes for these youth. Teachers are sometimes in a position to directly observe and intervene in peer victimization occurring among their students. However, research findings suggest that teachers may not always intervene in the way that students wish they would, and also that intervening in sexual orientation-based peer victimization can be particularly difficult for teachers. But when teachers do intervene, they can be an important source of support for lesbian, gay, and bisexual students and make a very positive impact on school climate. So overall, there's a need for research that will help us understand teachers' motivations to respond when they observe sexual orientation-based peer victimization. The research that has been done to date suggests that, which is primarily qualitative research with small samples, suggests that teachers' beliefs are likely to factor into the way that they respond. So, for example, teachers who believe that it is part of their professional obligation to intervene when they see a student being victimized, or who believe that they can be helpful, might be more likely to respond. Whereas teachers who believe that bullying and name-calling are just normal adolescent behaviors, or who are worried about making the situation worse, or about negative reactions from school administrators or parents, may be less likely to respond. So we conducted a quantitative study to further explore the beliefs relevant to teachers' intentions to intervene in sexual orientation-based peer victimization. So our methods. The participants in our study were secondary school teachers in the Netherlands, and secondary school teachers work with students who are aged 12 to 18, so what would be like middle and high school aged students in the U.S. We recruited teachers to participate by first making contact with schools and then asking if the schools would be willing to distribute our survey to their teaching staff. Our survey was web-based, and we developed it using Qualtrics, and school officials distributed the survey link to their teachers by email. So this table displays some demographic information about the 343 teachers that participated in the study. So their average age was in the mid-40s. About 60% were female, and 6% were lesbian, gay, bisexual, or other sexual minority identity. And on average, they had about 16 years of teaching experience. About two-thirds taught in schools that were either in Amsterdam or the other major cities in the Netherlands. So that's an area known as the Randstad. Okay, so as part of the survey, the participants were presented with a hypothetical scenario about the bullying of an openly gay student. So they randomly received equivalent versions that had either male or female characters. And the scenario was as follows. So Klaus and Martin are two male students in your school. Klaus is an openly gay student, and you know that he is sometimes picked on by other students for this reason. One day, you are in the cafeteria while students are having lunch. You see Martin call Klaus a faggot and knock his lunch tray out of his hands, spilling food on Klaus's clothing and the floor. So after reading the scenario, the participants received several items about beliefs that I will talk more about in a minute. But then they were asked, how likely is it that you would intervene in this situation? And they responded to that using a 5-point scale with the endpoints, 1 being very unlikely and 5 being very likely. So after being presented with the scenario, the participants were asked several follow-up questions. They were presented with 15 statements that represented beliefs related to intervening in the hypothetical scenario. And I'll show you the exact wording of the statements when I present the results. But basically, they were asked to indicate their level of agreement with each statement. They responded using a 5-point response scale, so ranging from strongly disagree to strongly agree. And we developed the items on the basis of literature review. So we looked at some of the qualitative research that I referenced earlier in the presentation. But our thinking was also very much informed by the theory of planned behavior. So that's why we were focusing on teachers' intention to intervene as our outcome variable. And within that model, one's beliefs about the outcomes of performing a particular behavior are very important, and so that's kind of what we wanted to explore. So I'll show you the analyses that we did on the beliefs that we asked about and how individual beliefs were correlated with intentions to intervene in the scenario. So I'm mainly just going to present bivariate analyses. So then on to the results. So first, here is a bar graph just showing the distribution of participants' intentions to intervene in the hypothetical bullying scenario. So as you can see, the participants generally reported strong intentions to intervene, with the vast majority saying that they would be likely or very likely to intervene in the scenario. And then on this slide, you can see on the left 4 belief statements that were included in our survey. And these 4 particular statements represent positive behavioral beliefs about intervening in the hypothetical scenario, so or beliefs about positive outcomes that might result from intervening. So you can see the last statement on this table, about more than 90% of the teachers believe that intervening would set a good example for their students, while fewer, only about 60%, agreed that intervening would teach the perpetrator a lesson, or that they are a unique source of support for the victimized student. And then the first and the last statements on this slide were significantly correlated with intentions to intervene. So now on this slide, we have more of the negative behavioral beliefs about intervening. So beliefs about potential negative consequences of intervening in the scenario. So you can see that very few teachers endorsed these types of beliefs, which included concern for their own safety or worries about making the situation worse for the victimized student. And because these were negatively worded items, you see negative correlation coefficients, but all of these beliefs were significantly associated with intentions to intervene in our bivariate analyses. So then some additional beliefs that we examined were about knowing what to do in the situation, whether school policies would guide the teacher's response, and perceptions of the teacher's role. So knowing what to do in the situation and believing that addressing such a conflict would be a good thing were positively correlated with intentions to intervene. And for the negatively worded item about responsibility to get involved, which is the last one on this table, we found a significant negative correlation with intentions to intervene. So the final beliefs that we studied were related to teachers' sense of control over students' sexual orientation-based bullying behaviors and the inevitability of these behaviors among their students. We found that these beliefs were present in what I would say are significant minorities of the participating teachers. So you see 14% saying these behaviors are just a normal part of adolescence, and about 30% saying no matter what I do, students will always pick on one another. And you can see that the endorsement of these beliefs was negatively correlated with intentions to intervene. So before moving on to discussion of the findings, I just want to talk very briefly about some more of the work that we have done with this data set. So we prepared the idea for this presentation when we were in the very early phases of analyzing the data that we had, and so we have since gone on to do some further work with it. So we conducted factor analysis with the beliefs items that I've shown you and developed an 8-item behavioral belief scale. We then examined behavioral beliefs, self-efficacy, and descriptive and injunctive norms together as potential determinants of teachers' intentions to intervene in sexual orientation-based peer victimization. So again, we're looking at additional constructs from the theory of planned behavior. We also looked at the same set of determinants of intentions in relation to a verbal bullying scenario. So I'm just going to show a very brief depiction of some of the findings from the multivariate regression analysis that we did with the full model. So we found that not only behavioral beliefs, but also self-efficacy predicted intentions to intervene in the physical bullying scenario that I've shown you. And we also found that injunctive norms were an additional significant determinant of intentions in the verbal bullying scenario that we looked at alongside the physical bullying scenario. So then, just to summarize our findings, we found that teachers reported strong intentions to intervene in the hypothetical sexual orientation-based bullying scenario. Most felt that they could effectively stop victimizing behavior. Almost half said that school policies would guide their response. Very few had concerns for their own safety or about being perceived as gay or lesbian themselves. And knowing what to do and feeling responsible to intervene were strongly correlated with intentions to intervene. So then I just want to conclude with a few comments about the implications of our findings and possible avenues for future research. So one thing is that by focusing on teachers' intentions to intervene in a hypothetical situation, we have not connected their beliefs to their actual behavior. So while we know that intentions are a strong predictor of behavior, further work is needed to explore teachers' actual practices day to day. But I think the findings do offer some important takeaways for those planning interventions that aim to enhance teachers' ability to support LGBT youth. And the takeaway is that not only should we be working with teachers on their concrete skills, so what to say and do when they confront these difficult situations, but we should be working with them around the beliefs and also self-efficacy, that kind of thinking that they carry with them into those situations. So I just want to end with acknowledging the many people who supported this work, the research assistants at the University of Amsterdam, who helped us implement the survey, as well as many people who helped us with the survey items, and all the participating schools and teachers. I'll leave the references there. That's it. Thank you very much for listening.
Did you include in your instrument anything in regard to social desirability? So to find out if the teachers were in fact
responding
from a
socially
desirable perspective?
We did not.
Were you surprised? I was surprised looking at your data, the numbers you presented, at the relatively low correlation between behavioral intention and some of the behavioral, I don't know which particular theoretical construct, but the, I would be setting a good role model for the students, and it was only a 0.28 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I was saddened by the low correlation between that behavioral intention.
Yeah. You know, with all the things that we looked at, I not too much. I mean, some of the things from the literature, I think, we expected, we weren't too sure what we would get out of it, to be honest. Yeah.
In your regression analysis, did you look at school policy as a picture of kind of what you were thinking?
Yeah, we did. Because it was an anonymous survey, we didn't collect school level data, but we did ask, whether the teachers knew about, were aware of certain policies in their school, and we did look at how school factors related to the other determinants that we looked at, and so in the larger analyses that we did, we do have that data, and it didn't turn out to make a difference.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.